because we're observing, or trying to observe here in our community, International Peace Week, which Karen probably knows something about, but she's going to say. We're going to hear some stories to hopefully broaden our concept of peace. We talk a lot about it, I think, and I think we probably tend less to personalize it than we do to globalize it. And tonight we're going to maybe do a little bit of that through some personal kinds of stories. So what is International Peace Week, Karen?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that. I read about International Peace Week in Sojourners and in the communities pamphlet of the communities in the Northwest. And they're observing International Peace Week in various ways in different congregations. I'd know more about it if I was not at Holden Village, because I'm isolated. How's that?
Great. Well, we have panelists tonight who are Dick and Marsh and Kim and Margaret and Ed. The questions that we gave them a few days ago so they could begin to think about this and kind of conceptualize what they wanted to say are: how have your notions of peace changed or grown over your lifetime? And the second question is, how has your faith determined or defined your concept of peace? I didn't have any volunteers for who'd like to go first. I did have one for who'd like to go last. I don't know where we'd like to begin. Would you like to begin, Kim?
No. Okay. The first thing I remember in terms of my memory, when I was little, I was watching TV. The first memories of TV is the end of the Vietnam War. So I never had a sudden revelation that there was wars. I always knew that we had wars, rescue missions, whatever. So I never was shocked, which I think would be a really neat thing if our society could be shocked by war. We aren't, but anyways. I did not realize that I did not like peace until it hit me personally. I read about the church's stance on a justified war at the same time a cousin whom I loved a great deal went into the military. Right now I'm at the perfect draft age. The only reason I'm not registered is because I'm female. All my friends are registering right now or have registered. Because of that, it's easy for me to become really militantly peace-oriented. I used to go around every week and take all the draft cards out of the post office. I remember the day we invaded Grenada last year was really, that was a hard case for me. I had my wisdom teeth removed that morning, and so I didn't learn about it until 2 days later when I was driving to school and I had the news on. And all of a sudden I learned about our invasion that we'd had 2 days ago, and I felt personally violated. I was extremely angry that they had done this without my permission. That was when it hit me the most, that they had done this without telling me, that they had done this in my name. I am a U.S. citizen. And they hadn't told me, they hadn't asked me. Because of my faith, I've never said, because I am a Christian and I believe this way, I am peaceful. I don't think that is the right way to go about it. I think it is more, if you live a Christian lifestyle, the peace comes out of it. It's not a decision.
All right. Let me start out by saying I fully supported the U.S. war effort in World War II. The reason for that was because we were attacked at Pearl Harbor without warning without a declaration of war being made, and that also that attack was planned for 2 years, more than 2 years prior to the time that it took place, and at the same time it was made while negotiations were being conducted. And the people of the United States were enraged, as I was, by this attack. Now, I would still support a defensive war by our country. And when I say defensive, I mean where our people and our country were threatened directly by an opponent that was out to try to either annihilate us or subjugate us. On that score, now, let me go on to say that war actually solves nothing. And this is my true feelings. Peace, and to get on to what peace means to me, peace does not always mean agreement or tranquility. As examples, debates, negotiations, athletic competition. Now these are all what you would call confrontations, but they're peaceful. There are many peaceful confrontations that are actually confrontations, and differences of opinion. And all of these things contribute to progress to the population of the world. That is the way much of the progress is made. Now, I really don't know what effect my faith has had on my attitude toward peace. I cannot define it at all, what my faith has done about it. But I would certainly work for a peaceful settlement of any conflict. That's my feelings on the subject at the present time.
I remember when I was a kid, we didn't talk a lot about peace. In fact, we didn't talk a lot about much of anything like you guys talk about these days. I guess maybe things were a lot simpler. I'm serious. We didn't talk about, you know, international politics or national politics. We were lucky to even know who the President of the United States was when I was even in high school. But I can remember them saying, the politicians saying during the World War II that, you know, the World War II was going to be the war to end all wars, so that our kids would not have to fight the same kind of a war. And of course, it's always the same thing. Every war is a war to end all wars, and no war seems to be the last one, because we always seem to be right in the middle of another one. Even when we don't have a war, we have a Cold War, which is probably almost as bad as the Hot War. So, and then the question that always comes up to me is, what is peace? And, you know, I don't think peace is absence of war, because even though we don't have a war, we still have conflicts among ourselves, even within ourselves. And to me, let me just give you an example of the way I used to have a terrific temper. I mean, it was to a point where I would just practically go insane, almost, you know, just really to a point where I know at times I could probably very easily kill somebody if given the circumstances. And I used to be proud of that temper. And I guess I was proud of it because it was a way of controlling people. And finally, one day, my wife Lois brought that right to my face and said, "You're really proud of your temper, aren't you?" And I hadn't thought about that before, but she was right. And from that time on, I have never really been proud of my temper, and I've realized that probably is more detrimental to me than anything that I can think of. And I've tried to learn to control that. I haven't completely, but one thing that happened, As you all know, I work in the automobile repairing business, and I'm a little bit, quite a bit independent, and I don't like to work for other people, but I have to. And it so happened down in Chico, I was working for this one guy who was a lot younger than I was, and that made it even worse. And one day, I don't know the exact circumstances, but anyhow, I got mad at him and told him I was quitting. I mean, I really got mad. He called me up on the phone, or I called him up on the phone, and I really read the riot act to him and told him I was quitting. And he was really surprised. And usually when I quit a job, I never go back. I mean, I don't go back to the same job again. But this time, I can remember the next day, whenever I get upset, I like to take a long walk. And out where we live up in Paradise, and there's a lot of empty space. So there's a dirt easement, and we can walk several miles. So I was out there walking one day, and I said, well, Lord, what do you want me to do now? And I was walking along, and all of a sudden it hit me. Now, my boss's name was Jack, and it said, love, Jack. I said, that's hard. I really had a hard time with him. I said, you're going to have to show me how, Lord. And so I went back and told Lois, and she was just kind of sitting there waiting to see what I was going to do. And she waited for 3 days. And finally, one morning, I said, well, I'm going to go down and talk to him. So I went down and told him that I was sorry I got mad, and that I'd like to have my job back. And he said, are you serious? He didn't believe me at first. And I said, yeah. And so then we talked about that. And I wound up going back. But one of the things I always remember, I'll never forget this, it was very dramatic to me. I told him what I had heard on that when I went for a walk. I said, you know, I went for a walk the other morning, and the Lord told me to love Jack. He started crying, and he came up and hugged me. I mean, that was so profound. It was much more powerful than anything else I could have possibly done. And to me, that's the beginning of peace. Making amends with somebody you have wronged, admitting that you're wrong. So often, wars are started because we're never willing to bend at all. We always want to be right down the line. That is the way I see it, and nobody else can see it any other way. And otherwise, we're going to get into a conflict. And to me, that's peacemaking. And then, I don't want to take up too much time, but since some other people didn't talk quite so much, we have a neighbor who is a real, well, when we first moved to the place where we live, everybody warned us about him. He sued everybody, and he was out to get everybody, anything he could get. Well, it turned out, you know, he came up and started making friends with us. And we were really suspicious because we were, oh boy, you know, this guy's really going to get us in trouble. But a couple of years ago, the area where we live is building up pretty much, and the road that we're living on is dirt. And he cut his arm with a chainsaw, so he couldn't work. He's a contractor, and he couldn't work for about a month or so, which meant that he had to sit home and listen to his wife bitch all the time, you know, especially about the dust the people were causing by driving fast with their trucks down the road. So he decided to put a nice little ditch right across the road, you know, make everybody slow up. Well, at first I thought that was kind of, you know, that was all right because he got kids and his wife was complaining about the dust. But then I got thinking about it that he put the ditch where he didn't have to go across the ditch. You know, it was below where his wife was. So I went up and I talked to him, and I said, hey, how come you put the ditch where you don't have to go across it? If I have to go across it, why don't you? He said, well, I'll put another one up where I have to go across it. Well, he never did. And I got, the more I thought about that, the madder I got. You know, I got to realize how crazy things that go through my mind, you know, and all of a sudden it dawned on me how sinful we really all are. But sometimes it doesn't come out. You know, I think we all have the capacity of doing the worst. We all have the capacity of doing the best, too. But finally, after all these lousy thoughts, and it, you know, it finally dawned on me, hey, you know, this isn't right. It's really disturbing me and hurting him a bit. You know, I go zooming past that ditch, you know, hit it as fast as I could, making as much dust, and all kinds of goofy things. And finally, I got around to thinking, you know, maybe I ought to think about this guy as a fellow who is really in need and needs Christ's love just as much as I do. And that, by thinking that, I really changed my whole perspective about the guy. Because when you pray for somebody, it's really hard to hate them, you know, if you really pray for them. And that, to me, is the beginning of peace.
My first memories are like Kim sitting in my dad's lap watching Martin Luther King be shot and Bobby Kennedy get shot and the Vietnam War, and just realizing that we lived in a really violent country. I remember one night the soldiers, they had pretty much live footage, and I was watching soldiers march, and I asked Dad whose side that was. And I got sent to my room because I thought it was a basketball game. I hadn't asked the question correctly. And so I just remember feeling that we lived in a very violent society. And then also being raised Mennonite, the mindset was always that we weren't part of what was around us. And of course war was unthinkable, and of course any violent action was unthinkable. And I never knew anybody that was in the army. Well, at school I did, but I didn't go to Mennonite school, but our church, no one had ever been to the army. And so we felt pretty good about our peacefulness in the sense that we never took part. Peacefulness in the sense that we never added, or we didn't blatantly contribute to violence. And so that's one really early memory that way, and a feeling of separation that way. And another kind of feeling of separation for me was I had I always felt very much a part of what was around me, but just like at school, I could go there. And I had a family at home that loved me, and I had two dogs, and I had the countryside, so I had everything I needed. And it's like if there was conflict, I didn't need it, and I didn't need to deal with it. And so I'd just retreat and be happy on my own. And at that time, and a lot of my friends didn't have what I had, and I saw peacemaking as being reaching down and fixing, paying for the pizza for Ron because he doesn't have any money, and understanding when he yells at me because he doesn't have a father. And I guess the challenge for me as far as peacemaking is concerned is feeling, when it comes to the United States, like Kim was saying, I would have a hard time feeling as though I was responsible for that, because the challenge for me is to remember that I'm a citizen of this country, and that what happens is part of my corporate responsibility. That's the challenge. So I need to get more immersed into that, thinking of myself as American. And then another part of that was I always felt that I'd been given a lot, and in my personal relationships I was always willing to reach down, and that's what I was doing. Always willing to give in, always willing to give, and I thought that was peace. And I guess, well, Dan used an image, Tim, earlier, used an image in a session where an Arab guy had fixed a carburetor, And after he'd worked on it, it was running perfectly. And he used a word which meant righteous. And to be righteous is to be peaceful in that sense, where every part is doing what it's supposed to do, not more or not less. And yes, I think of peace a lot more on an individual level than a global level, because I think it's something that can happen when individuals recognize a common humanity, or like Marsh was saying, Marsh had some good stories. And it's something that can happen, but it's not something that is. And I guess I'm real cynical about mass movements and about wars, and et cetera, because there's never a means to an end, there's only the end. And that's my end.
Well, I had to struggle with all thinking about wars and peace, and since I'm not such a big person on global issues, I had to start my peace movement by shrinking it down to be personalized, to put myself into a peaceful situation. For 10 years I was active as a host parent and a board member of Twin City International Program, and I figured dealing with people from all over the world, I was always sending off a little piece of myself, and this way creating my form of peace. Twin City International Program is an exchange program that brings social workers and teachers of handicapped children, probation officers, chemical dependency counselors, youth leaders to the States for either 4 months or 4 years. And I was really active with this group, setting up programs, setting up housing, really busy. But it wasn't enough. There was something missing in that. I could host parents and I could tell people how to take the bus, even though I never got on a bus. I knew all the routes and went through all the host parenting orientation. The kindness that I showed these people, the gentleness, the care, the love, I was always giving out. But there was something that it wasn't returning to me, it wasn't returning to the community. And I felt depleted and tired, and I didn't understand why I was feeling this way. And I was giving, and I just figured if you give, you know, you always receive more than you give. But I was zapped. I wrote down here, it's like going for a walk and getting sand in your shoe. And the walk would have been more pleasant had I just bent down and taken the sand out of my shoe. And the irritation was that I was not peaceful inside. Once these people left my house, it was like a yearning that they could no longer fill, that I still wanted to do something for them. Their letters a couple of times a year didn't mean as much to me. And again, it was all because I was not peaceful inside. In order to give out peaceful vibes and work for peace in the world, I had to be peaceful. I had to accept peacefully that I was living on less money. And that was the beginning of my journey of not being angry at being a single parent, of accepting it, doing the best that I could in my situation. I stopped fighting the whole world, I stopped blaming God, and I started living on less. One of the things that I discovered on living on less was looking in or buying a new cleaning product and trying to jam it in a cupboard that was full of 20 other cleaning products, and realizing I did not need 20 cleaning products to clean my house, that I could do with less. And with that realization, I started living, trying to budget better, living with less food, less meat, with less paper products, because we used a lot of paper products in our house. And just cutting down, consciously cutting down, changing my lifestyle, because first I was forced to, and then knowing that I wanted to, that there was a peacefulness inside when I started not using so many consumer goods. I stopped smoking, which my children enjoyed immensely. And I realized that with myself being more peaceful, I kind of felt closer to Jesus. When Jesus walked the earth, he took care of his fellow man or fellow human being first. And his good news spread to the whole world. But he didn't say, well, let's see what's happening in Namibia. I think I'll go over there and take care of them. He helped his friends, his disciples. With the peace that was inside of me, then I was able to reach out to my neighbors, and I actually made my immediate block neighbors. There was a lady on the block that was really in trouble. She was going through a divorce, and she needed someone to talk to. And I would go two blocks out of my way so she wouldn't see me, come home from work, because I knew if she saw me come home, she'd come over to the house and sit and want to talk. Well, I stopped avoiding her and just sat down with her for a couple of hours, and we talked. We did this a lot of times. And for me, that was creating peace in my block. At work, a lady walked by my office, and I had one of these Dutch doors for protection so I could close out the world but still see it. And she walked by and she was crying. And I stopped her and said, why are you crying? And she said that her baby was born yesterday and it might not live, it was badly deformed. And I just put my arms around her and held her for a while. And that, a few months before then, or maybe a few years before then, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have looked at a stranger and asked, what's wrong with you? Can I help you? And I'm sure it was the peace that was inside of me working to go out, to reach out to others. The baby did live, and a couple months later she brought the baby into the office for me to see, a beautiful, tiny, tiny little baby, but it was getting better. The same with a Native American man that would come into my office to use my phone, and he would scare the mess out of me when he first came. He was different. He was Native American, and usually he was drunk, and I would make sure my door was half shut and dial the number for him and hand him the receiver so he didn't make a long distance call on me or have to walk into my office or whatever. And one day he came in to ask for work, and I said no, there was no work for him. But I opened the door and let him in to sit down. And in my office at the church, I had a little chair like I have in my office now. And he sat down and he started telling his story about being in Vietnam. And he pulled up his pants leg to show me his wound, and I almost passed out. He would come into my office to call the VA to see what his check was. And I said to him that day, why are you getting a check? And just sat down and pulled it up, and half of his leg was out, was gone. And it's like after that, he wasn't my enemy anymore. I wasn't afraid of him. He shared part of himself with me. And again, I couldn't have done that if I hadn't been, had this peace inside of myself. And that's my peace story.
Did this bring up any other peace stories from other people about how individually you encounter what we talk about, maybe intellectually?
As Margaret spoke, I kept thinking about, this is a quote I learned a few years ago from a teacher. This Confucius said that to establish order in the state, you must first establish order in the family. And to establish order in the family, you must first establish order in the self. And in that phrase, I equate order and peace as the same thing.
Along the same lines, for me, what I've found, I was somewhat of an activist, I guess you could say, for the peace movement, but I think the greater peace comes when we learn how to have peace within ourselves and peace within our hearts. And for me, that's come through prayer. And it slowly changed me. And I think that when that happens, when a person prays, that peace that they have really goes beyond bounds that we can just, you know, mention. I think that when we do just a little thing, maybe we don't quite understand that it has a wider ramification to it. Just a little teeny offering to someone else, or maybe just give out some kindness. I think that that really is adding to the whole movement of peace. And I think it's just belief that Christ is there working all the time. And that really that peace is simply trying more and more to be like Christ. And when we do that, at least I found in my own life, it seems that conflicts I had with people around me and things just seem to go away. And it's as if through praying about them, I think that an interesting thing I heard once is that, you know, prayer is probably the hardest thing we do. I mean, to continually try and, you know, do things with a prayerful attitude, but then everything else becomes easy. And I think that for me, that's been very true. I found a lot of situations that used to be conflicts have become very peaceful.
As I was listening to Margaret talk about her, the fellow who was a drunken Native American, it made me think, you know, so often we act out of ignorance or fear. And now Margaret, her first inclination was she was afraid, because here was a drunken Indian, and then all of a sudden she found out this drunken Indian was a human being and had needs just like she did. And then she was able, because he opened himself up to her and became vulnerable to her. And I think that is really the secret of Christian community and Christian peace, of being willing to be vulnerable to each other. In our church, we have a support group, which started out as a parenting support group, but grew into what we called the faith support group. And I'll never forget one fellow who came, and the first time I saw him, he was very angry. He and his wife had gone through a nasty divorce. He'd been married about 10 years, and he absolutely hated his wife. And that particular evening, the first evening that I saw him, I came in and I had gotten mad at one of my kids for something, and I was really angry, and I shared that anger, and because he saw the anger in me, he was able to, for the first time, express some of the anger in himself. And over a period of 3 years, that poison has come out of him, and it's just a miracle. You know, we talk about the miracles of God. We always look for physical healings, but some of these healings in the spirit are so much, are not as dramatic, but probably more, much more meaningful as far as the individual is concerned. This guy now is talking to his wife and realizing that some of the things that he and his wife have been going through has had a great effect on their kids. And it's just a great, really great to be able to see this happen in our church. And it's very gratifying to know that by becoming vulnerable, then we can help other people become vulnerable. And I don't know the other way that we can truly be human. Because we tend, we always tend to build these walls around us to help protect us.
Remember, me and my brother used to clash all the time about anything. You know, we just, you know, it could literally end up in, you know, I was in high school in a violent confrontation because he'd say something, you know, and I'd just state my opinion. The next thing I know, he was, you know, mad at me and just, you know, we'd get. And for years I tried to deal with it. You know, I thought, it can't be me. I mean, I do not act like that. He just goes wild, you know, I don't know why. And then I started to realize that really what I was doing was I wasn't really listening to him and treating him like a human being in a sense. And I think as soon as I started to, like you said, be vulnerable and just open myself up, now we can sit down and talk, where before anything would become a confrontation. It's just like opening yourself up, empathizing, I guess, you know, trying to see the other person's